Welcome back to the Don't Worry About It podcast, where we talk all things mental health related, from anxiety to depression, from happiness to sadness, and all emotions and feelings in between. My name is David Izzo, and I started this podcast to help facilitate conversations related to mental health topics. On this week's episode, I sat down and had a chat with Ariella Azaraf. Ariella is a clinical social worker with extensive experience working with adolescents and young adults struggling with anxiety and depression. Ariella has a virtual private practice and is a school social worker at Manhattan Day School. She specializes in anxiety and depression with young professionals and feels passionate about providing empathetic and warm support to her clients, assisting them in finding meaning and purpose in their lives and relationships. Ariella feels passionate about helping her clients cultivate a space for self-compassion and self-acceptance as they move through struggles in their lives. I'm really grateful to Ariella for coming onto this podcast and having this conversation. I know we touched on a lot of important topics that I know were super valuable for me, and I hope you guys enjoy them as well. Thank you guys so much for listening. Ariella Azaraf, welcome to the Don't Worry About It podcast. Thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you for having me here. I've been so excited for this.
Yeah, I mean, the first time I heard you speak was about a month and a half ago, and I added you to my list, and I knew I had to try and get you on. So I'm so grateful that you decided to join us. And if you wouldn't mind just introducing yourself for the listeners, who are you and what do you do?
Yes. So my name is Ariella Azaraf. I am a licensed clinical social worker here in New York City, back and better than ever. I work at Manhattan Day School during the year as the social worker for middle school, fifth through eighth grade. And I also have a private practice part-time where I specialize in anxiety and depression and with a focus on self-acceptance and cultivating a sense of self-compassion for ourselves. I mostly work with young professionals, so I love the emerging adult, kind of the post-college years in your 20s, you know, sometimes 30s, figuring out this adult life, right? Trying to navigate what our core beliefs are as we kind of move through the world and really working through relationships, breakups, creating and cultivating a sense of self, all through a lens of self-compassion. So really getting to know yourself in a deeper way, you know, that's really what therapy is there for, through a lens of just embracing all the hardships and the struggle along the way.
Hardships and struggles are so common for especially people like me and of our age demographic in the 20s and 30s, where we are seeing an uptick in kids struggling with that sense of self and the identity. I guess if we could start just from the beginning of that step, how does one go about finding themselves, creating that identity and cultivating it?
Ooh, that's a good question. You know, I always say that you have to feel hard, you have to hurt hard, and then you heal hard. And a lot of times people want to skip over the hurting hard, you know, the healing hard, the feeling hard. We don't want to feel, right? We tend to, you know, numb our feelings by scrolling TikTok, scrolling Instagram, drinking, you know, drugs, you know, just distracting yourself with events and social events. And we sometimes have a tendency to just not create space to really feel. So the first space of really identifying and embracing struggle is being so real with yourself, really getting vulnerable with yourself of I'm struggling right now. So the first step of really recognizing that something is wrong is by admitting to yourself that you're having a hard time through, you know, whatever it is that you're moving through. But first it's recognizing the struggle.
So step one is just acknowledging that something is wrong, or something, maybe wrong is not the right word, but something is happening.
Yeah. I think it depends on what the struggle is, right? And what mental health struggle somebody, you know, what their demon is, right? So that sheds light as to why, you know, something might be more difficult. But first, it's getting very real with yourself. Yeah.
And I think a couple of terms you used early is self-acceptance and self-compassion. Can you describe or define those terms, and how do we go about really understanding what they are?
Yes, I would be happy to. You know, so I always like to define self-acceptance as truly experiencing who I am, right? Experiencing myself fully without any self-judgment, self-criticism, and self-evaluation. So it's just really acknowledging the the true me and accepting who I am, right? Not saying, okay, this is who I am, that's it. There's room for improvement, but self-acceptance is just really experiencing yourself without the judgment.
And in terms of self-acceptance and self-compassion, I know that there's a couple of places where we hold our emotions and places that we can create space. You know, I believe a term that we'd spoken about the first time I heard you speak at an event was you talked about the somatic holding emotions that are stored up in the body. And that's a physical aspect as opposed to, you know, the mental aspect that we create themselves. Those two seem to have to go hand in hand and work together in some ways.
Yes. Yes. One of the best books on trauma out there is Your Body Holds the Score. And I use that saying a lot in my work because in somatic experiencing, it's exactly what you said, David. It's that we believe that emotions are stored in the body. And very often we need to kind of heal from the inside out, right? We need to really check in with ourselves of where are we holding tension in our body and what is showing up for us and what does that mean? Because our minds are busy all day, right? Getting stuck in loopholes and just filled with so many thoughts. And sometimes to really still the mind, we need to still the body. And a lot of what I do in my work and the, where you had heard me speak, I do a lot of meditation and mindfulness, is that when we calm the body, we're able to calm the mind. And when we calm the thoughts, we're able to really feel embodied. We can be aligned with our body and understand what's going on inside.
Mindfulness and meditation, two of the biggest buzzwords, not only in the mental health community, but it seems to have broken out into the real world nowadays. You know, I speak about mindfulness all the time. It's something that I've actively been trying to learn more about and to pursue through meditation. But, you know, a lot of people, when they hear the words mindfulness and meditation, they immediately turn off from it. Why do you think that is?
People are not comfortable with themselves. People have a very hard time being one with their thoughts. You know, I just had a session earlier tonight, David, and we had our talk therapy, and towards the end, kind of just to seal the work, it's really good work. I had said, let's do it like a small meditation to feel your feet on the ground. That's where we always start, to feel gravity just holding you and to still your body. And my client said, I'm playing with a fidget. You think I'm meditating, but I'm playing with a fidget, right? Gotta love teletherapy. You need to be super honest. And I said, tell me what that's about. And she said, I can't be alone with my thoughts right now. You know, and it's interesting because mindfulness and meditation is a buzzword, and Headspace, you know, one of the most popular meditation apps is on Delta and United. It's on all these flights. It's on bus stops. It's trending totally. But people are so uncomfortable in the quiet.
Where does that discomfort come from? Where, why is it? Is it, are we afraid to face our fears? Are we just afraid to be uncomfortable for 1 second? Well, we'll do anything. And I mean, anything, playing with a fidget spinner, you know, scrolling on an app, anything just to avoid confronting something.
Yeah. I think there's a lot of fear. There's a fear of the unknown. How will I feel if I'm sad? There's a fear of change. If I acknowledge that I'm sad, how will that shift things in my life?
And if we avoid confronting that fear, that shame, that guilt, whatever that emotion is, how is that going to manifest later on? Is that going to be something we can see problems with immediately, or is that somewhere down the line?
It's a good question. You know, so a lot of times in trauma work, I use analogies because I think sometimes trauma can just feel so intense. So we need analogies to kind of bring it down. And I use this analogy of, you know, let's say you fall really hard and you have this big open wound on your knee, right? And you put a Band-Aid over it. And then the blood keeps seeping out. So you have to constantly change the Band-Aid and you have to constantly. And then at one point it's like, okay, this is like a bad cut. Like I need to go get this fixed. And you go to the doctor. The doctor has to open the Band-Aid. It hurts. It's raw. And perhaps they have to assess the wound and then do stitches, right? So the Band-Aid won't fall off, but there's going to be a little scar. There's going to be a little scab there that will heal, but it's there. So a lot of times when we want to suppress emotions, that's the Band-Aid that we're putting over a bleeding wound, right? It's a Band-Aid that we're putting over, whether it's a toxic relationship, whether it's a trauma that is unhealed, whether it's an inner child wound, right, whatever it is that you're moving through, when we just put a Band-Aid over it and we're not okay in the quiet, it's going to seep out. It might feel good in the moment of, okay, I don't want to deal with this, but in the long run, it's going to continue bleeding, if you will, in that analogy. So the longer that we push off healing, right, the more difficult it is.
I think that's a really strong analogy. It always brings you back to something I always like to say about it. Sometimes in the moment you need to triage, you need to treat that wound in the present, but there's a false security of, right, putting that Band-Aid on it, thinking that you've solved the problem. And while putting a Band-Aid may stop it from getting infected or may stop it from immediate pain or repercussions now, you've still not fixed or done the work to solve the problem, and it is still there regardless whether you acknowledge it or not. And I think going off of what you said, it just leads me to I guess my big next question, really, it stems into this navigating this adult life, right? We're all, for the most part, the demographics of people that are listening to this are young to early 20s, late to late 30s, people that have experienced or experiencing anxiety, depression, especially coming off this pandemic for the first time, and they're just learning now or experiencing symptoms or just small to big mental health challenges that are happening now as we're entering or navigating this adult life. And there's some real challenges going around. Based off of your experience, what are some of the big challenges that you're seeing, and what can we do to combat them?
Oh, good question, David. That's a really good question. You know, I think a big piece that comes up for a lot of people in their young 20s and post-college is this concept of boundaries. Boundaries with friends, boundaries in the workplace, boundaries in dating, boundaries with family members. You know, because you're in these, the early 20s and 20s in general, and also throughout life, right? But early 20s really is a formative years, of trying to really cultivate a sense of self, right? So you're no longer a kid, you're no longer a teenager, you've graduated college, right? You're perhaps paying rent or you've landed your first job, and there's all these different parts of your life that you have to really navigate, and it's new. And I think a really big piece that comes up is, first of all, taking yourself seriously, identifying a sense of self-worth. I am worthy. I'm worthy of healing. I'm worthy of boundaries. I'm worthy of an identity other than my family. And I do see a lot of my work with that age is setting boundaries, learning assertive language.
Do you think these problems are more prevalent in the modern Orthodox Jewish community versus the rest of the, I guess, society and culture?
You know, so a lot of my private practice clients, I treat both. I have a bunch of clients in the modern Orthodox world, and I also have clients that don't identify as Orthodox. And, you know, I definitely think that there are certain stressors in the modern Orthodox world when it comes to dating and it comes to community.
More than
I think some of my clients who don't identify as Orthodox, but in terms of dating and boundaries and the workplace and family, those are common denominators. I definitely think the core beliefs of the Orthodox community and the stressors, kind of the nonverbal stressors, right? Kind of like the messages that you get from your community or your family, I think create more stress, yeah.
Absolutely. Something you just said that stuck out, and it's something I've been thinking a lot about and speak with some good friends just about how to set them up, and that's boundaries. It's something that I think we all know we need, and we become really, really bad at setting them up. How do we create and build successful boundaries and healthy boundaries in our life?
It's a good question. You know, I think it depends on who you're creating a boundary with. So the first place that you create a boundary, the first place to start truly knowing that you can even create a boundary is having a strong sense of self-worth. So it's saying that I am worthy, right? I am worthy of healing. I'm worthy of setting this boundary. And I don't want to just be taken advantage of. But to be able to even get there, you know, we need to really say, I care about me. You know, sometimes I say boundaries, you know, setting a boundary is saying, I care about you, but I care about me too. So it's kind of like this fence that's protecting you. So, you know, if it comes to friendship, right, it's trying to really get in touch with, well, what kind of energy is hard for me, right? Who in my circle or who in my environment doesn't make me feel good? Like, whose energy depletes me? And what energy do I like being around? So with my friends that deplete me or drain me or are bad energy, right, setting up a boundary with them, I say that the number one skill in setting a boundary is I say you always stem from a place of I. It's hard for me when, or I'm feeling like. Because when you start from a place of I, it enables the other person to hear you better. Instead of saying you, right, then the person's on the defense. Like, what the heck are you about to say about me, right? But when you say, when you take ownership, the other person is able to hear you better.
Wow, that's I think really, really enlightening and very true. And in a lot of aspects, I think just when you were saying it, it kind of was doing like a logic train. If you don't, if you have a sense of self-worth, that means you value your time. It doesn't mean you're saying I'm more important than anyone else. It's saying for me, if I have to take care of me first before I can help take care of other people or be the best version of yourself. And for some reason, and myself very much highly included in this category, we have a hard time accepting that and seeing that as a selfish behavior. And it actually only became a pretty recent realization on my own that that's not the case. That taking care of yourself isn't selfish. It's self. Mm-hmm. It's actually has some similar patterns to being selfless. You're willing to get over your own insecurities or get over your own sense of fear of it to be at your best behavior, best mental health, best physical health, yeah, best whatever it is, to then be of service to others. Because if you're dedicating yourself to others at 40 or 50% capacity versus putting yourself first in certain situations that allows you to compete at 80 to 90 to 100% capacity, what's more valuable?
Yes, 100%. I love how you just articulated that, because I think a really big piece here is that self-care is showing that you care about yourself, right? It's saying that I take myself seriously. When you have no boundaries, and when boundaries are blurred, there just ends up being more hurt, right? So we talk a lot about people-pleasing, right? Very often people that people-please and don't know how to say no, they have some type of unhealed trauma, right? Or they have a hard time setting those boundaries down. But it's actually very, not only attractive, but it's very impressive when somebody is able to set that boundary, because they're saying, I'm not available right now. I'm taking care of me, right? If a coworker calls you on a Sunday and you say, you know what, I'd rather not talk about work on a Sunday, and that person tries to fight the boundary, that's just because they've benefited from you having them.
If any of my coworkers are listening to this, that's exactly what I'm doing. Please don't get mad.
Take note. But I heard that quote one time, that the only people that struggle with boundaries are the ones that benefited from you having none.
I'm sorry. Can you say that one more time? Just because I think that I understood it, but I think there's a lot more there.
Yeah. The people that struggle when you put down a boundary are the ones that benefited from you having none, right?
Right.
The ones that benefited from you always being available, always taking their call, always hanging out, and all of a sudden you put down those boundaries, they're going to struggle because they benefited when you were just available.
Right. You've now taken away from them, and because they've recognized a pattern, they now feel entitled to your time, to your emotional well-being, to your emotional, mental time, to whatever that is. They've created that, they believe in that relationship. Which leads me, I guess, to a follow-up question is, how do you change boundaries? How do you create them? You've established a pattern of behavior with people. You've developed and cultivated relationships with people. You've created expectations and given them reason to expect certain things. How do you then shift that dynamic?
Mm-hmm. It's a really good question. It's a really good question, because it's something that a lot of people struggle with. First of all, I'm a big fan of therapy. So if you're in need of, I always say therapy, a therapist is kind of like someone that can help a tour guide or carry the torchlight for you through darkness. So if you're struggling in any relationships, you know, get into therapy and talk it out. But practically for this podcast, I just feel like I have to say that because it's true. You shouldn't have to, this is something that a therapist can help you with. But when you want to put down that boundary and when you're struggling with it, the way to put it down is by, first of all, taking yourself seriously. You are worthy. You are taken seriously. You may feel young, but if there's anything in a relationship, if there's somebody's energy that doesn't feel right, right, that's when you put it down. So, you know, I have a client I'm working with who has a friend that they go to a lot of events together. And she has a certain friend that she feels kind of latches onto her. And this one girl wants to do her own thing. So they can go to an event together, but she wants to be able to kind of do her own thing. And we were talking a lot about what language can I use, right? And what can I say to her? So a part of it is saying to, is being transparent to your friend of saying, you know what? I love having you here. You go do your thing. I'm going to do my thing. And then let's meet up at the end, right? So it's stating your truth. So it's asserting yourself, you know, in DBT, dialectical behavior therapy, they have a lot of different skills and acronyms to help assert yourself. You know, one of my favorite is Dear Man. And it's really about describing what you need, explaining your need, asserting your need, and then redefining, right? And there's a whole other part to that, but it's really about breaking it down from a place of strength. So taking yourself seriously and asserting yourself.
I wonder if you don't take yourself seriously, how can you expect others to? Right? If you're not going to value yourself, then it's hard to expect other people to value you, right? It's not a redeeming quality, and it's not something that people really want to associate themselves and be around. What, for right or wrong reasons, I think naturally we tend to get pulled towards people who have those healthy boundaries, who have set up those dynamics and have created the space. And creating space has become such a word we throw around here, but I think in this context, it really does make that sense, where you, by creating boundaries, by setting terms on a relationship, and being able to cultivate and craft relationships based off of healthy dialogue back and forth, being able to say to somebody, I can't speak about this right now, I can't talk about this tonight, and then you offer up a solution saying, hey, I can't talk to you about it right now, let's follow up in the morning, or I'll be able to speak for 30 minutes tomorrow, or a few days from now. And
And a person's response to that gives you so much information about them. You know, because I also want to mention that it's post-pandemic. Like, I can't have any conversation about mental health without including what we've just been through, really, as a world. And I think that people have gone through such, really, I grief, different varying degrees of grief. Maybe they've lost someone, or maybe they've moved through their own trauma, right? Or they lost a job, or whatever it is, or they lost a formative year of their life. And people are evolved versions of themselves. So we're coming out of this pandemic, very different versions that we came in. And it's going to take people around you. It's going to take them a minute to get used to this new you.
Right. We've kind of took, like, for some people a few months, for some people a year, some people you haven't seen now for a year and a half. And the person who came in is not the same person who's coming out, and having to adapt and adjust to it. People who may have been more social, less social, may have pulled towards that, whatever side they were on, they may have pulled even farther to it. The antisocial have become so far antisocial, and the uber social have gone the other way, that it's kind of, and people you may have lost contact with and now are afraid to reach back out to, because, hey, we haven't spoken in a year and a half. I think that there's become, it's kind of creates into that anxiety monster, that fear of the unknown, of knowing where you stand with people. And as instead of just reaching out and finding out, it's a lot easier just to stay in that unknown, as opposed to finding out that answer, regardless of knowing the answer will make you, can and probably will make you feel better about that result, wherever you do stand. It's that, knowing where you stand is better off than not knowing.
Yes. And so that's also another boundary piece to navigate, is that friends may have an expectation of who you were before, but perhaps you're an evolved version and they need time to get to know that you.
Right. And this post-COVID, world that we're living in, and all these changes going on, I go back and forth and I'm just trying to figure out where we stand and where the conversation is going to go in terms of mental health. I just think there's no way to know now. I have my suspicions, I have my ideas, I have my guesses, but I think the lasting effects of this shutting down, this lockdown for a year and all this stuff, I don't think we're going to really know how it affected us on a macro scale. And more, I think most importantly, it's kind of just figuring out how it affected you on the individual scale. How did it change the individual? How did it change you? How did it change me? How did it change the people that, that are around us? Did some of us lose, like for some people, life didn't change much. For some people, their entire world really changed. And I think walking in and being part of conversations with understanding that those outcomes and all the outcomes in between are on the table for people. And I think something that I know I came out of it was just an appreciation of other people and understanding just in most and almost every response, if you just do the decent thing and act in a decent manner to people mm-hmm. and give them a decent amount of respect, you're going to be covered on almost all your bases. And that's at the minimum level.
Yeah. You know, gratitude is the highest emotion. So when I say highest emotion, I mean, when we always want to function from a place of light, right? We want to spread good energy. We want to just be light. It's attractive, right? You attract men, women, friends in all different areas, right? Potentially work. And when you function from a place of gratitude, and I think a lot of people are now as we reemerge and, you know, we move through 4th of July in a very different way. 4th of July last year, no one could hang out, right? We were deep in quarantine and unknown. And moving through 4th of July this year, I don't know about you, but it's like a deeper level of gratitude of like, wow, we could go outside. I don't have to wear a mask in some places. I could be with my friends. I'm reunited with my family. And when you function from a place of gratitude, it helps you have more light. It helps you feel more positive, for sure.
Yeah, for me personally, whenever I'm in that darkest time or whenever I'm in the lows, I've trained and I've spent quite some time, and thankfully I've had some really good therapists and some really good friends that have been able to help cultivate this. But that's usually when I become my most grateful. It's where I focus singularly on. I don't say none of the bad things in my life are happening or they're not real. I allow them to have their space and I give them the proper respect and credit. And I just focus on the whatever positives mm-hmm. or things that I have to be grateful for. And there's no shortage. Mm-hmm. And you start listing them up and you go 1, 2, 3. And by the time you start listing them off, and then if you can't go to 5, 10, you just focus on those few and you extrapolate them. You really bring them out. Mm-hmm. If I have this, because of this, I have all these other things. And
yeah.
It doesn't solve your problems, but I think in those low moments, it kind of can give perspective. And I think the more you can give, I think especially with anxiety and mostly anxiety, depression is a whole different animal. But with anxiety, I think perspective, especially after the effect, when it starts to lower, perspective is, I think, one of the best treatments.
Yes. Yes. I love your vulnerability, David, because it's so raw. It's so real. And that's what I think connects people. You know, I think what unites people is when you're vulnerable with one another. And I think that a big part of navigating, honoring the pain is the power of holding both, right? So it's holding, it's not saying but, because but negates one truth. So you could struggle and you could feel grateful. You know, when we talk about in grief work, right? When I work with clients who are moving through grief, we hold space for a lot of pain and we find space for what is working right now. There's so much that's not working and what is working. And I love how you said that, because it's not negating toxic. I'm allergic to toxic positivity, right? It's not just saying all good, all okay. No, it's saying this is really hard for me right now. And in light of that, and I feel okay and I'll make it through.
Yeah, I'm neither a toxic, I never got into toxic positivity and I've never got into the inverse of it either. I kind of just try I'm a bored pessimist that is just praying to be an optimist at some point, but sometimes you just got to accept your default nature and work on building around the edges. But I do think that there is an aspect that where fake it till you make it has its dues. But I do think, like, and I love how this is coming full circle, I think a lot of these things are band-aids. And if you need to fake it till you make it to get out of a panic attack or do whatever you need to do to get through something, whether it's a medication, whether that's a CBD, a big component of CBD helps me. Anytime I feel like I'm about to have a panic attack, it's like, this is triage, I'm taking care of this, but that's always going to be followed up with a phone call to a friend or a therapy session or mm-hmm. a walk, deep thinking, hey, this popped up, what's going on here? And then I always finish it up with a game of real or not real. Are these mm-hmm. thoughts that are coming in, are they based in truth? Are they based in insecurity? What are they based in? And yeah. is this something I should take seriously? Or is this something that's just, you know, I'm 26. Yeah. I've been living with my brain and I know how it operates. It's really good at what it does. Knows me better mm-hmm. than anybody else. Like, and I know it. So it's like, turn that anxiety and that little voice in my head into like kind of my best friend that we fight too much. It's like your it's like your best friend who like some you when it's great it's great, and when it's bad it's like you know how to exactly how to get under under the other person's skin. But I think that that's I think it's a very common thing. And listen, you asked me this 5 years ago, I wouldn't be able to acknowledge it or say it, which is part of the growth aspect. And I know we're starting to run out of time, so I wanted to just shift. And I love where this conversation is going, but I wouldn't be doing justice if I didn't ask you some questions on how did you get so good at curating social media content and mental health? Because nobody out there is doing it like you are.
Oh my gosh, David, that means so much to me. Wow. First of all, sorry, before we even shift, I just want to say, I love how you just worded that, that you've befriended, because that is self-acceptance is loving all parts of me. It's saying, okay, Mr. Brain, like you really mess me up sometimes. You really get me off track, right? I used to have a client that called her anxiety like the drunk monkey that would sit on her shoulder. And I love that because it was like a totally different being. It was a different voice, but it took over. So I just love how you said that, that it's years and we're always evolving. We're different versions, right? Now you're David 2.0, right? 5 years ago, you were struggling and loving yourself through the process, what I feel passionate about. So I so appreciate you mentioning that about my social media, because every single post truly is from my heart. I started getting active. It's so funny. I started my Instagram like in 2019 and I posted like once every few months. And then when COVID hit, you know, we're all on our own healing journeys from whatever we've all moved through. It was in November. I started posting almost every day. And then I took the leap and I'm like, okay, I'm going to try out this reel. But so much of my posts, you know, I'm just logging on now to this podcast after a night of sessions back to back. And my clients inspire me so much. And so much of my content is based on our sessions. It's sometimes based on what I read, different podcasts I listen to. And it's from my heart. And I feel like there's such an incredible space of wellness on Instagram that you can tap into, and you know, you scroll and you can get your fashion dose and your workout dose and your, you know, your wellness dose, but then there's this whole mental health community that's being built, and it's quite incredible.
Yeah, I really have to say, and anybody who knows me will second this, that type of content is not I have a mental health podcast where I love talking and having stories, but that type of content I've seen from so many other people just to me is such a turnoff and I can't stand it. And I saw yours and this is where I think you don't really can't describe authenticity until you feel it and you see it. And your content really is authentic and it works. And I only know it because I know if I like it, that means it has to be like high end, real authentic, really has to be authentic. And I really have to give you credit where credit's due, because it's so... there's a real vulnerability to what you do with that content. I don't know if you understand or give yourself enough credit for it, because you are putting yourself out there for an unlimited amount of people to see. It can catch on and go viral. It can see people, it can be seen by people you do know, by people you don't know. And every day you're at it multiple times a day, stories, posts, reels, all these different things that is, and it all falls on you. I really have to give you a ton of credit. Not only is the content really strong and really good and really helpful and valuable, you do it in such an incredible way. And I really highly recommend, we'll plug your Instagram at the end here, but I really highly recommend everybody checking out your Instagram, follow, give it some time. It'll seep in. You won't regret it.
Oh, that means so much to me. Thank you so much. That means the world. Cause you know what? It does take a leap, you know? And I feel like every time before I post, I say, okay, I hope this resonates with someone today. You know, it's from my heart. I'm going to put it out in the space, in the universe, and I just hope it resonates. And it is. It's vulnerable. Yeah, I'm putting out my thoughts in this unknown space for sure. Every word you said is so meaningful to me. Thank you, David.
No, of course. Listen, you earned every word. And lastly, just a few final rapid fire questions. What made you get into this line of work? Why do you do what you do?
I was always a little curious, George, my parents would say. I always had a hard time keeping conversation surface level. I love people. I love people's stories. I love to help people. I love to support and problem solve. I'm an empath. I'm a very empathetic, deeply empathetic person. And I am deeply connected. I love to travel. And one of my favorite parts about traveling is you get to meet people. And all my life, I always was just so curious about people's stories. So when I started college and I went to graduate school, I always knew that I wanted to do this work to just help and connect.
And I guess from just maybe 1 to 3, however many things you want, really, what are some things people can start doing today in the short term to develop a healthy mental health routine? And what are some long-term things people can start doing?
Oh, that's a good question. What are some things you could start doing for your mental health today? I think the first thing I would say is to get curious with yourself. To step away from judgmental and to start getting very curious with yourself. So observing yourself in social situations and dating, at work, with your friends, get curious. I think that we tend to go straight to this place of judgment. So get curious. 2 is to tap into mindfulness, right? It's to tap into, I think we also live in this culture of like, we have to answer the phone right away. We have to text right away. We have to answer that DM. Like, no, you don't. Take a beat. I think the whole world truly is reactive. I know it's a generalization. Some people are not. But I think that tapping into mindfulness, and not just as a buzz, cool word, but truly giving yourself that space to take a beat, not judging others' process, not judging others where they're at, just being mindful of those around you is so important. And I think another point, I just was talking about this with a client, I think the word should needs to be thrown out of the garbage. Should gets us on a bad train. It's like the wrong train going in the wrong direction, right? You know, you get on the 3 train uptown and you're like, should, I need to go downtown. Like the should train is toxic. You should be here. That is where you should be. So when you feel I should be married, I should have gone to school. I should have to really take a look at that word and throw it away and ground yourself in the present. Really feel your feet on the ground and say, I should be here.
That's a really good one. I think the subway, New York City subway, is like the perfect example of that, because the New York City subway realistically is phenomenal. Like almost 95% of the time, at least for me, when I use it, it works. It comes on time. It's air conditioned. It's a good experience, and it gets me from A to B pretty dang closely almost every time. But when it doesn't work, it completely, I've noticed it, like, it's like the worst, used to react like it was the worst thing in the world. And I was like, it should be here. It should, all these things. And I was like, it should work. I'm paying the money for it. It's a service, it should work. And I'm like, 95% of the time, it's like, does its job, but I never, ever acknowledge it. It's like the subway comes exactly when it's supposed to. I get where I need to go exactly when I was supposed to. And it's like it should, but you focus on 5% where it doesn't. You never, if you don't acknowledge that 95% when it does, you're giving all that power to the 5 when it's such a minuscule amount.
Yes. Yes. There's so much more, but if you're asking for my top 3, compassion, 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 be gentle with yourself, get curious, stay present, right, stay mindful.
Perfect. And what's one long-term thing we can start doing? I have a suspicion you're going to say therapy, but maybe I'm wrong.
No, a long-term, I think an important piece is to start looking at our habits. Habits are important. Habits, how they inform our practice, they inform our behavior. I think that's a lifelong piece. What is my habit? You know, I work with a lot of people, their habits after a breakup, after a divorce, you know, after quitting or getting fired from a job. What are my habits? What is my self-talk? What do I feed myself?
Much better. Apologies for making an assumption.
But a therapist awesome. Would highly recommend therapy long-term. You made a right assumption.
I think it's the easy one. I think it's the answer most people give. It's the one if somebody asked me, I would give. So I may project it onto you. So I need to be more mindful of myself in these situations. But as we wrap up, I want to just give you the floor now. If there's anything we didn't touch on or something you want to expand on or just a final parting thought, I want to give you the floor now just to let it out.
There's so much. And you asked such good questions, David. First of all, kudos to you. I think this space podcasts are so important. I tell my clients, you go on a walk, put on a podcast. You're sitting cooking, put on a podcast. Like, educate yourself, you know, and it's cool people like you who have moved through challenge and are vulnerable and open with the world, and you create this space. And I have to give you kudos. You really didn't let me, you really made this happen. You really made this happen. I know my schedule wasn't easy to track, and you should have strength to continue doing this, because it's super important, because people's stories and people's vulnerability is contagious, you know, and when you put yourself out there, you don't know where this will land for someone else. And being very truthful and real with where you're at and what your journey has been could completely light somebody else's lamp. You know, you're a lamplighter and spreading light of saying it's okay. We're all in this together. We're all struggling. We've all moved through things. So giving your friends and your you know, your fellow people, just humans, a space of identity and you're not alone in it, right? Sometimes mental health can feel so lonely. And it's people like you that create platforms to no longer feel alone.
Yeah, I thank you so much for the compliment. And I think everything you're saying, I can get it, I understand it, but I reversed. I think it's people like you doing the good work, and it's people like everybody else that's come on the podcast sharing their story, people who reach out privately. And the podcast was just meant to bring a light to the people that wanted to bring it to the light, but there's the battles and the conversations that are going on behind the scenes that are just as important and doing the work. The goal starting this podcast wasn't just to, I was hoped that people would be willing to share their stories out loud, but it's the hope that it sparks a change in people's private lives. It's the goal isn't not everybody should listen and be like, I have my story, I want to tell it to the world. If you do, that's great. But the goal is maybe you don't feel like you can talk to anyone. Maybe you reach out to a parent, a sibling, a friend, just maybe you start going to therapy. Maybe you just start taking an initial step for yourself. And those are the fights and those are the conversations, the battles that go on behind the scenes that people don't get to see. And that's when people reach out and say that's the stuff that really is a cherry on top. And of course, and listen, if anybody else is out there and got inspired by listening to you, by any of the other stories, and you want to come onto the podcast, all you got to do is reach out. And I'd love to have you on. And you have an open invitation anytime you want. Anytime you want
to
come back on.
This was so fun. Thank you.
If you guys would like to hear more about all the incredible work Arielle is doing, please, I highly recommend checking out her Instagram. There's such incredible content. You can find her at Arielle Azaref, LCSW. And also check out her website, ArielleAzarefLCSW.com. I'll put links in the show notes below. If anybody out there is interested in coming onto the podcast or has any topics, ideas, suggestions of people to reach out to, things I can cover, please feel free to reach out. You can reach me through my Instagram at Don't Worry About It Podcast or email me at Don't Worry About It Podcast@gmail.com. I'm really looking forward to getting back into it and putting out episodes much more frequently. Thank you guys so much for listening. I'll see you next week.